Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Laurent Caudrelier.
We're all the same on the road, and you get to meet incredible people with very diverse backgrounds and experiences, and that just opens you up to like the world that you don't necessarily see. Because we're all in our little bubbles, like with our colleagues and our friends, but there's all these other people you would otherwise never get to see or meet or talk to. But when you're running, like, hey, we're all the same. And so it doesn't matter what color skin you have or how bad or good your week was. We're in this together and you can share and learn from each other.
On this episode of The Rundown, I made my way down to New York City for the marathon and had the opportunity to chat with elite marathoner Ali Kiefer. After retiring from the sport in 2012, she decided to give it another shot. She went into her first marathon thinking she was going to run the half the night before and ended up winning it. That was the 2016 Miami Marathon. And only a year later, she managed to shave 25 minutes off her time, finishing fifth in New York City. After battling through injuries this season, Ali remains resilient, dedicated, and focused on the Olympic trials in Atlanta next February. This episode of The Rundown is proud to be sponsored by eloendurance.ca, your one-stop online shop for all your nutrition needs. Training for a marathon is not only tough on the body, but it's time-consuming as well. I know personally, I'm constantly juggling my runs with work, family, and friends. The one thing that always seems to take a backseat is my on-course nutrition. I'm always rushing to the store the day before my race to grab gels and settle for whatever flavors are still in stock. eloendurance.ca makes ordering your favorite gels, chews, and hydration mixes simple and easy. They're a small family-run business that understands the needs of endurance athletes and loves staying connected with this growing community. With the ability to mix and match your favorite flavors at bulk pricing and quick shipping right to your door across Canada, eloendurance.ca can help keep up with the pace of your busy schedule. To help make them your new favorite nutrition supplier, eloendurance.ca has generously offered all the Rundown listeners 15% off your next order. Just type in the promo code LORUNDOWN15 at checkout and let eloendurance.ca help fuel your next run, ride, or hike. In this week's news, now that you've recovered from and celebrated all the races you've done in 2019, you might be looking for a few workouts to get through the winter and into spring training. Well, you're in luck because Canadian 800-meter champ Melissa Bishop recently gave her favorite off-season workouts in an article in runningmagazine.ca. For strength, she suggests hill workouts. Melissa usually does a combination of long and short hills during each session, short being steep 100-meter distances and long, more gradual inclines around 400 meters. She'll usually do 6 or 7 long hills before adding a few short ones at the end. Another workout she likes to do is some speedy loops around her local park, warming up at tempo pace before building speed. A workout is usually something like 1 lap of 1,250 meters, 3x750, and finally 3x500 meters, increasing speed as the distances shorten. And finally, everyone's favorite, the long road tempo workout. She doesn't do more than 30 minutes, and it consists of 10 minutes easy, then 10 minutes moderate, then 10 minutes hard. Simple enough. No doubt there's definitely more to her overall routine in order to compete at such a high level. But try these out yourself. They might get you through winter and hopefully keep those legs fresh for your next big goal in 2020. Since we're coming to the end of Movember, I'd like to talk about ways you can improve your mental health. In a study published in the Journal of Depression and Anxiety, they found that people who generally do more physical activity have 20% less chance of being diagnosed with depression. You might ask, what do they mean by generally? Well, normally 30 to 45 minutes of exercise can decrease the chances of depression, even if it's something that runs in your family. All forms of activity count as well. Low intensity or high intensity provide the same results. You could go for a run, strength train, swim, do yoga, meditate, or stretch. It'll do the body good. With that said, being more active does help, but it's not a proven cure. So if you know you're at a high risk of depression or experiencing signs of the condition, such as fatigue, sadness, or anxiety, reach out to your healthcare professional for a proper diagnosis. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. Yesterday, I was pretty fortunate to run my second major and in the New York Marathon. My next guest in 2017 finished fifth, and 2018 finished seventh. And I'd like to welcome Ali Kiefer.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me and being here with me today.
It's going to be fun.
That's for sure. Ali, like, usually I like to get started and ask all my guests, like, how was your upbringing? Were you always athletic as a kid? Like, kind of was a,
yes,
a big thing.
Like, my favorite class in elementary school was gym class. I'm from New York. I grew up on Long Island. I did a bunch of sports when I was younger, mostly like soccer. And my sister ran, so I followed her into the sport. I moved up to high school track when I was in eighth grade, just because I kind of wanted to like be where my sister was. Yeah, that was pretty much.
Did you fall in love with track right away? Like, did you just enjoy it?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was obsessed. My best friend and I, she lived across the street from me. So we would get up in the mornings before school, which starts at 7:20 in New York. Like, it's a very early. Mm-hmm. So we're waking up at 5:30 to go for a run. And then we go to practice after school, like with the team. But we're addicted.
And what age were you when you were doing that?
That was high school.
Okay.
But I remember when I quit playing soccer to just run, my mom was really upset. I think it was her social circle kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I just loved running from the beginning. It's just seems so simple to me. You put in effort, you get rewarded, mm-hmm, with a good race result. And I'd never really had much confidence before I found running. And I didn't realize, I think, that I could be good in school or like I could be successful in other things. But it came pretty easily, I think, in running, and ended up like transferring over that gave me the confidence to do well in school and to like think I could do bigger and better things. So, yeah.
So the confidence from running just carried through in other aspects of your life? And
yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I think that in some degree, it's like I feel like I got confidence or had self-esteem because I was running fast. So my self-esteem was tied to running fast, and I've had a bad year athletically. So it's been a little bit like rocky for me, but I don't think I would have ever gotten to this place if I'd never found running. Like, I would have never accomplished I'd never written in a magazine, and I got to do that because of running. And I went to Wake Forest, which is like an amazing school, and I got an athletic scholarship. I would have never gotten into the school off of my own academics. But then I realized that I actually like could keep up with everyone. Mm-hmm. I just didn't apply myself before. And so I think what running taught me is that if I apply myself to other things as well, I can be successful in those things too.
Mm-hmm. Is there certain aspects of running that you carry forward? Like, is there like, is it the training? Is it the discipline? Is it like, what's the structure in running maybe for you that you transfer over?
Like, I just think it's given me the confidence to like know I could do it. But probably the hard work transfers over.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to be pretty like diligent and dialed in to be successful in running. And I like that. I like living the lifestyle. I don't look at my friends that go out and go party and want to do that. I have no desire to be there. I want to be so tired from running that I want to go to sleep early and wake up the next day and run again.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
What was the distance you were specializing in at a young age? Like, you said you were running fast. So what was the...
In high school, I was a miler. Even in college, I was a miler. It took a while for me to figure out that I actually am not that great at the mile.
But you, so did you just enjoy that and you continued on with that? And, or did you, did that go on and transfer on to other distances? So if you didn't like the mile, were you interested in more longer stuff?
I love the mile. I mean, I would be a 400 meter runner if I could sprint that fast. I love being on the track too. And I like the 10K and the 5K too. It's not that I don't like it. It's just that, I like to be competitive at the professional scene, kind of. I don't have the wheels to be able to keep up with them. So I've just, you know, found that I'm probably the best at the marathon, but I'll still compete in the track.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Did you jump to the marathon like immediately, or was it like a slow, what was the transition like for you?
So I did train for the 5K at the very end of college, my fifth year. And then my first year post-collegiately, my coach trained me for the 10K. It seemed pretty obvious to other people that I was, you know, more longer distance was going to be better for me. And so I did have success immediately with the 10K and, made the Olympic trials. This is in 2012, but then I ended up getting hurt, quitting the sport, moving to New York City, not to run, to just like move to New York City. And then I was started running again to make friends. I had this like side hustle of a coaching business. I was having a lot of fun and I figured, hey, if I'm coaching people, I'm running with them. So I might as well hop into some races on the weekends and make some money at your roadrunner races. Did that. And it kind of like, I was like, oh, I'll go travel to some races. So I went to go travel to Miami, Florida and do the half marathon. And I got to the race and there was a bunch of like good elites there. And I just figured I can't compete with them. Like I'm not, I know like what it takes to run at that level. Cause I'd been there when I was training for the 10K and for the Olympic trials years ago, but I wasn't fit. My fitness wasn't there. And so I was like, who's running the marathon? It's the same technical meeting. And they said like a couple people from the meeting were running the marathon, but most people were running the half. And I was like, all right, well, is it too late to switch? And it wasn't. So I switched, took my first like gel during the race. I had no idea what I was doing. I'd never run, in the past 4 years, I hadn't run over 18 miles, but it worked out. That's where I ran the 255. I just kind of went out as slow as I possibly could to like still be in contention to possibly win. And luckily it was warmer. It's Miami, you know, and they, the leader came back to me in like the 22nd or 23rd mile. And, my boss the next day was like, you're like probably a marathoner. And I was like, no, definitely not. Like 255. I was like, isn't that competitive on the pro scene? But a couple months later I ran the indoor marathon. So 211 laps on an indoor track.
Oh my God.
And I ran like 244 or something and set a new world record, which like nobody runs a marathon indoors. So it's a pretty weak world record.
World record nonetheless.
Yeah. I'll tell my grandchildren. and she was like, no, really, like you're a marathoner. It's super cool. And I was like, no, it's like really not competitive on the like, pro scene. So I still thought I was a 10K runner. Mm-hmm. Even when I crossed the line after getting fifth in the New York City Marathon, I was like, man, I'm going to have a good 10K this year. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely a marathoner.
And so what keeps you pushing forward to try and improve your times and be the best you can be at whatever distance you're choosing to do?
Yeah, I think that I just believe I could be better. So definitely have been people that believed in me before I believed in myself, and people that believe in me even in these like times where I kind of stopped believing in myself momentarily. But I keep going because I'm still really enjoying it. And I do think there's like a lot of potential in there still. Mm-hmm.
Did it help you to take a step away from the sport? And did you find was it the same love? Just like you realized you missed it, or was it a new love? And like, how was it different for you?
Yeah, it definitely helped to take a break. Just, I think I needed like a mental like separation, and I didn't have a sponsor back then. So, I'd made the Olympic trials, but I spent all the money that I had. My parents saved money for a college fund, and I got a scholarship to college. So I spent my college fund like trying to run post-collegiately. And I also think I felt pretty entitled then. Like, you know, I made the Olympic trials, so someone should pick me up and I deserve this or that. And coming back to it after years, I was just happy to be there. You know, I didn't feel like I deserved anything. And I feel like that's carried with me now too, where, you know, a company might not see any worth in me. I'm not guaranteed anything or another contract or, so I think it was helpful that, it all played out that way. I kind of wish I never quit though, because I feel like I might be ahead on my timetable, you know, if I hadn't taken so much time off.
Yeah. But I mean, I feel like in marathon especially, it does take time to get better and to improve times. And like, almost like you start looking at these marathoners and like the older age groups are the most competitive. You know what I mean? Like I'm 35 and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to win a marathon, but like, I still feel like there's like still a lot of room to grow with that, like as you get older. So
yeah, it is pretty amazing. Like people aren't really slowing down. They're speeding up at that age. It's incredible to see. It's inspiring because I'm like 30, I'm 33 and no, I'm 32 and I'm like, man, I feel like I have a lot of years left. Mm-hmm. And so everyone's talking about the Olympic trials and it's going to be such a great race and I want to do well there, but I feel like, you know, it's not the be all end all, though I think I'll be around for 2024, you know, with sponsor, without sponsor, I'll be there.
Is that the goal for you to make the Olympics? Like what's your dream?
Yeah, my dream is for sure to make the Olympics. I think that I would love to get top six at this trials. And then I want to go to the track and do the 10K. Because I think what's interesting about the Olympic trials in the U.S. is there are a lot of people who overlap the 10K and the marathon. Like same people are pretty good at both. But there are a few people that aren't as good on the track. And so like if all these track stars make the marathon team, like Molly Huddle, Emily Sisson, Kellen Taylor, you know, they're all very good in the 10K and the track. So does that leave open spots on that 10K team if those are the people that go to the Olympics for the marathon? Mm. And if they don't make the marathon team, that 10K is going to be very hard to make. Right. You know, it could kind of swing either direction. Mm. So it'd be fun.
Do you think, like you just mentioned, like a lot of amazing female runners. Like I know in Canada, we've been lucky. I told you, like I've interviewed some of the best in the country. And do you think like women's running in general is like at its all time high right now with all these huge names and like big successes and even just most recently a breakthrough in the women's marathon time?
Yeah. I mean, I do think we're in a time that is pretty epic for women's marathoning. But I haven't done my research to know if like it's the all time best, but in the U.S. it's definitely the all time best. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Does that create like an added pressure for you as like a role model to a lot of like other female runners? I don't know how, like I'm sure people like contact you and stuff for advice or.
Yeah, but I don't think of it as pressure. I just think of it as support.
Mm-hmm. So they're just like, they're around you, and it's just like I think maybe a better community in general for the sport and for women running too. Like, I mean, I find it inspiring as well. Like to see, like some of the times you're putting up, it's like super impressive. Especially like in the New York Marathon. Like I said, I raced it yesterday, and I'm like, it's not an easy course, you know.
No, yesterday felt like the hardest time I've ever had on the New York City Marathon. Because usually you don't feel the hills until the second half, and the whole time of the first half, I only made 12 miles, and I was like, "Man, this is a hilly course." Mm-hmm. And then someone afterwards was like, "You didn't make it to the hills, though." And I was like, "Felt like it. Felt like Brooklyn was hilly."
Yeah. No. And is that, would you say that's your favorite marathon, or like?
Yeah, I mean, definitely so far. That was my third New York City, and I did those two, like the indoor and Miami. And those two are both great. I haven't had a bad marathon yet, I'd say. Yeah. But New York, I mean, it's hard to beat it.
What's your favorite part of the marathon?
I think mile 8 in Brooklyn's pretty awesome. That's Brooklyn surprises me every year because you kind of like don't think about it. You think of First Avenue, and then you get to Brooklyn and you can't even hear yourself think because people are screaming at that 8-mile marker. It's pretty intense. Mm-hmm. I also think I love First Avenue. I mean, come off the quiet of the bridge and there's all those spectators cheering. But Fifth Avenue also is pretty cool because by that point I've been lucky enough to be passing some people, and it's obviously things like builds a lot of momentum and helps me finish that race strong. So from an athletic standpoint, it's not as loud, but it's definitely like brings back good memories.
Mm-hmm. You feel the energy, and it seems like that climb goes forever.
Yeah.
I found it was like really tough, but like also, like, I mean, that's where I struggled the most, probably 32K in. But yeah, I can imagine if you're leading the
pack. If you hit that feeling pretty good, you're doing some damage to the other people around you. Mm-hmm. And if you hit that, you know, struggling, then it's just a struggle home.
Right.
But yeah, the other 2 years have felt pretty good out there actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, the result would say that for sure. Would you say that fifth place finish at the New York City Marathon was like one of your greatest accomplishments?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. My greatest accomplishment so far.
And what was that like for you? Can you explain?
Mind blowing.
Yeah.
It was just insane. Like, I didn't know that I finished fifth until afterwards and someone shot me a 5 and I was like, me? And they're like, yep, fifth place. Cause I didn't count the people ahead of me and I just kind of let them go. I let the whole pack go and I ran the most of the race by myself, but picked people up as I was going and I didn't count those people either. Like, so I had no idea where I was. But yeah, mind blowing. And just like, I knew I had a great race for me. It didn't really matter if I was fifth or not, but obviously afterwards it mattered because, mm-hmm. I expected that I got fifth in my first one, so I'll just keep improving because I'm new at this. And then last year I got 7th, but ran faster, and I was so let down. It was like, wait, that wasn't better, but it was better. But like,
what's happening?
Yeah, I'm very confused. So, it's definitely been my biggest accomplishment, but it's also like now I think what I measure success by. Unfortunately, I need to let go of that.
So, what is that? Do to you as an athlete when you set that bar so high every time? Yeah. What happens in the mental game, in the training? Does anything change? Do you just keep doing what you're doing, but it's always in the back of your mind?
No, everything changed after that, and I think that's part of the problem. It's like I trained beneath where I raced. And so then I wanted to start training at the level that I raced at to get even better. And I think I was pushing beyond what my body may be capable of handling and training. And so I've gotten a lot of injuries. And then like my workout hasn't equated to what I felt like I should be able to do, I've kind of got down on myself. And that honestly doesn't help me move it towards the direction of getting better. So it's been probably part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Is there something you're doing to try to improve that? Are you working with coaches? And
yeah, I have a sports psychologist and I work with her on it a bit. And I also think it's just like kind of like lowering the expectation. This guy wrote a book, Solve for Happy, and his equation to happiness was all hinging on your expectations. And so if you just lower your expectations, you'll be happier. And so if I can just stay positive throughout the race and stay resilient, I think it's all in just flipping those like you know, you have a slow mile and you're like, oh man, this whole thing's ruined. But it's not ruined. Like, you're doing fine. You had one slow mile. It was a hill. Like, if you just turn anything into somehow make it a positive, like, oh, well, I crested the biggest hill in the race. So now I'm, you know, don't have that many hills left. Then it will work in your advantage. But I have these like high expectations and I get down on myself when things start going wrong. And so I've definitely been trying to work on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a funny thing, like the expectations and everything. And I think everybody can relate to that, because no matter what level you're at, you always want to, I feel like everybody wants to improve every single time they go out. One thing I like to do is, like, I set up, like, I do like 3 goals for myself, or like just have like backup plans, you know, within a race. So we're not putting so much emphasis on that one goal, and if things start to go wrong, like you're saying, you slow down or whatever, that the whole world blows up, you know?
Right. And I think I do much better in a race scenario, because I've kind of visualized and thought about those same things you're talking about, like what happens if, you know, you have plan A, and that's great, if amazing if plan A happens, but if something, okay, so last year in the New York City Marathon, I ran with a pack, and someone at the first water station took the wrong bottle and then looked at it, noticed it wasn't hers, probably didn't want to ingest someone else's bottle because she didn't know what was in it and how it would affect her stomach. So then she threw it on the ground. I mean, there's really nothing else to do. You've already passed. You can't run back to the table and then you lose the group and a bunch of energy. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, oh my God, what if that was my bottle? And it freaked me out for like every water station next. And it was like a nightmare to get the bottles. And we're all kind of surging into the water stations, like a quick clip. And so it became fartlek feeling, which, as you know, isn't the best, like not the most efficient way to run a marathon. You don't want to fartlek it. Yeah. So I went in this year and I was like, okay, I'm going to just bring a gel with me, so that if someone takes my water bottle, you cannot control everything around you, right? Like, but if you can control bringing a gel with you, so I can have something extra just in case something goes wrong. But I was like, I can't go into the race stressed out that someone might take my bottle. Is mm-hmm. that I might grab my bottle and drop it. You don't ever know. Like, so I think planning for those like negative things and having an ulterior plan is great.
Mm-hmm. Finding a way to kind of, yeah, manage things that you can't within your control instead of worrying about things that you can't.
Yeah.
Like the weather, for example, you know, yesterday we were lucky.
It was kind of warm.
Yeah. It was beautiful. I thought it was really nice.
Yeah. I mean, it was really nice.
But Boston 2018, it was like that shit storm.
Yeah. I've been spoiled in New York. I mean, it's been good every year I've been here. So,
yeah. It's I really, really enjoyed the race. And I think I definitely want to come back and race it again. Do you think living here gave you some kind of advantage in your successes here? Or?
Oh, yeah. Because like I'm comfortable with the city. I know the city. I have so many friends and like people out there. I mean, I feel like I heard my name the whole like 12 miles yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was great. I think I'm just like comfortable coming here, and it's, I think probably a pretty scary place for, they don't, you know, people don't even know what to do or where to go when they get here. And I just feel like I'm coming home.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned some injuries as well, that you faced with, you know, trying to train harder for marathons to make these improvements. That's got to be challenging, certainly. Like, how do you deal with those things? How do you try and prevent them as best you can? Like, what's the... Because I know leading up to this race, it's been something that you've been dealing with. And it's something I try and prevent in my own marathoning and stuff, and, you know, trying to push harder in my workouts and stuff, but then it could open yourself up to those challenges. Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. Well, I think how I got hurt this time was that I was overtraining. And so then I went to physical therapy for the first time, And I did some exercises, like nothing that was abnormal or weird. It was just really mostly low weight, single leg exercises that most people should be able to do. And I was overtrained, so I just woke up and like I'd done something in my hamstring. I don't know what happened. But like there's something, I'm doing too much if I cannot go to physical therapy and do 40 minutes of exercises. You know, that there's like clearly a problem there. So for me, I need to go to physical therapy more often. Like now when I'm not overtrained, because now I haven't really been running that much, and start the exercises now so I can handle like the training for a marathon. Because I think my body can't handle what my mind wants to do.
Yeah, it makes sense. And do you do like strength training as well? Like,
yeah, I'm great at. I love strength training. I love throwing heavy weight around. Like that's my jam.
Okay.
But that's not physical therapy. It's very different, right? And so I'm strong. I have muscles strong, but I can't use all of the little intrinsic muscles because I haven't worked that. So like my right leg is much stronger than my left leg, and that imbalance is probably partially why my right leg seems to be the one that gets hurt, because I overuse that maybe because it's stronger. So like I let it do more of the work. My left like glute med is weak, and so I use my back instead. So I mean, there's all these like little imbalanced things that I definitely need to work on.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, and I think in new runners too, or anybody looking to make a bump up in distance, that's like, it's you have to work. You can't just go out and run and do training. You have to do like you have to do all of it, right?
Yeah, and it's funny because it does seem so simplistic, like you just put one foot in front of the other. And I think that maybe when you're just starting, like that works, just running works. But as you add more and more and your overall like volume becomes more, you probably need to do more preventative things like stretching and rehab, like all of those become, and I'm feel like I don't love physical therapy, but I'm like, I'll go get a massage.
Yeah.
You know, and I need to just like not be lazy anymore. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to do the things that we don't want to do because those are the things that we actually need the most. Like when you go to get the massage and you're like, oh, don't work on that like one area. Maybe you should just like go there for the one area that day.
Yeah, that's awesome. So is that something you're incorporating always in your stuff now? Like you're going to go and do physio, you do stretching, you have a routine for all these things?
Yeah. So I'm actually going to spend the rest of the week in New York, and then next week I'll start, all that stuff back, in Austin where I'm living. But I didn't want to start physical therapy before the race because it's sort of how I got hurt. So, I just like wanted to get through yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And so you're living in Austin now. Is that a good place to train for you? Why you're there, or why?
Is it what?
Because you were living here before. Why did you move to Austin?
Yeah. So my best friend was moving there, the one that I used to run with in high school, and her family lives there. And I kind of wanted just to like be around people that kind of like family, people that loved you or loved me with or without running. Like I needed to, if I got hurt or kind of when I got hurt, because eventually we all will get hurt, you know, have something beyond running. And I would live in Boulder and I would get hurt and just be like, why am I here? What am I doing with my life? Because the only reason why I'm here is to run, and I needed something bigger. And I still think I need to incorporate that into my life in Austin, like volunteer coach somewhere or coach at a high school, something. I need something more. But Austin is it's like a small city. Has like a large town feel. There's a lot to do, but there's absolutely no stress in Austin. The weather and the terrain seemed pretty similar to Atlanta where the trials would be. So I thought that would be advantageous. I'm not that good in heat and humidity, and I felt like, why not go to Austin and kind of get used to it early. So those are kind of all the reasons to go move there.
Amazing. So how long have you been there for?
Since February.
Okay. And you're enjoying it? It's nice.
I love it. Yeah, I love the people. I mean, I don't know if I'll live there forever, but it's been great so far.
Mm. Are you doing running full time? Or do you?
Yeah. Okay. I'm running full time.
Incredible. That's really, really great. And was it like, did you ever think you would do this like a full time job, or is it, did you have a career in mind? Like,
I don't know. I never, I guess when I was younger, I didn't know you could do this full time. I did write in my elementary school yearbook and in fourth grade, like we wrote what we wanted to be when we grew up, and I put professional runner.
Wow.
I'm not even really sure I knew that you could be a professional runner, but I had set the mile school record. So all the boys are putting like pro hockey player, pro football player. And I was like, fine, I'll be a pro runner. Cause all the rest of the girls were like models or teachers they wanted to be. And I was the little sporty of the group. and then I wasn't really that great in college. So the potential to go pro, like, didn't seem realistic. I kind of just like snuck into this, but I've always just kind of done in the moment what I feel like I want to be doing. So when I was living in New York, I was nannying because I wanted, that seemed fun, and it was fun, and I'm glad I did it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Living the dream.
Yeah, whatever the dream is, just like I lost my sister when I was in college. She was killed in a car accident, and I think that kind of taught me to just do what you want to do. Like, I know, I think my mom would prefer that I got a real job with a 401k and a little bit of stability, but I need to like live my dream. Mm-hmm. So
what she would want is one thing, but has your family always been supportive of your goals and your dreams?
They're super supportive of the running stuff. And my mom, I mean, she lives in New York, so she was here for the race. And I'm going to go out to her house today and hang out with her. They're super supportive. They want to be at everything. I'm kind of more like, it's a business trip, so it's great when it come, but you might not see me, which is sort of sad to me. Mm-hmm. But I have to, it's the job, right? Like, you're going to New York to compete in the New York City Marathon, not because you're going home. Like, and it's sometimes hard to like keep those two separate because it seems like, well, why wouldn't you want your mom at your race? And I do want my mom at my race, but I need to do like the press stuff and there's a lot going on beforehand. So, they've always been supportive of the running. My dad is too, but he lives in Alabama. And I was like, oh, I have a little hamstring thing, so just don't come this year. But he's been here the past 2 years and he hasn't, I mean, it's the only time he's flown in like 20 years to see me race. So
that must mean a lot.
Yeah.
I know my parents wanted to come to the race, but I'm like, it's so hectic. Like,
exactly. It's like, you be great to have someone with me, but I don't want them to like pay for all of that, you know, for me to like not be able to really give them the experience that they deserve. Mm. And that, I feel like sometimes there's a pressure there, where you want fans and supporters, and people have said that they want to go to Atlanta to cheer me on. And it's so nice. Like, definitely in Atlanta, I'm going there to do a job, and it's hard to understand that mindset, I think, when you're not in it.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents are very, honestly, they're very good at it. They've dealt with me for a long time now. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
When it's a job, like when it is your career, how do you keep it? Like, how do you keep the love for it? You know, like.
Yeah. I think I struggled with that this year too. Like, I think part of it is picking races that, because a major marathon is an opportunity to make money, right? And like, that is one of our biggest paydays as professional marathoners. But it's like picking the race that you feel the most passion to do, and not because you could make the most money or they offered the most appearance pay. Because if you pick it for the wrong reason, it's really hard to put in all that effort to train for it. And it takes a lot to get to the finish line. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. I also felt like because I had such a bumpy year that I like my love for it would kind of fade a little bit. But it's only reconfirmed that I still want to be doing this. Nothing has faded away. I 100% want to be out there going as hard as I possibly can every day to get better.
Yeah. Even in a tough year, you know, like there's still, I'm sure, so many things that you've learned or learned about yourself, you know?
Well, they say you win or you learn. So I've done a lot of learning this year, not a lot of winning, but it's been an experience. And I think that's why I decided to come to New York, because I figured I wasn't going to be able to run a PR or sub 230 or something that would be like, you know, I want to be competitive and I want to come to the race and give my best effort. And I knew that my best probably wasn't possible yesterday, but I felt like I could get some more experience for the Olympic trials and for years down the road. So and it was a very different race than it has been in other years. So I think it was very helpful to go run that and see how the pack went out, how that felt. Maybe what would I have done differently if I was in top form and felt like I was gunning for a top 10 spot, how would I have gotten the best out of myself? Which is probably to go actually a little slower than I went yesterday, mm-hmm. but obviously do double the distance plus 2 miles.
Yeah. And you saw Dez actually take a charge early.
I saw pictures of that, but I haven't dug deep into the results or the splits yet, mm-hmm. but I it sounds weird, but I like watching them afterwards. So I'll definitely go back and watch and check some splits and stuff. But I try not to focus too much on what everybody else did.
Of course.
As much as you can't control how well people are going to run or how poor, right? Sarah Hall had a little stomach thing and I thought that she would be in the top three. I thought she was going to be podium contending. And you just never know. You know, there's a lot that can happen over 26 miles. And mm-hmm. so I think that for the next one, which will be the trials, just focusing on me being the best me is my path to the performance I would think is successful.
Mm-hmm. Those are some awesome lessons that you learn. And I think every race that you do, I really admire the fact that you showed up, you know, you made it to the start line, because it's that's not easy, you know, and I'm not even a professional runner or anything but I think that's, to hear that is really inspiring at the same time, because you know that you won't get, on a day where you know you probably won't get your best, mm-hmm. you still showed up, you know?
Yeah, I know. It took a lot of mental energy to get here. Mm-hmm. Even a week before the race, I texted my agent and I was just like, I don't think I can do it, because I tried to do a workout and my hamstring was hurting. I was like, I just don't know if I'm physically capable to even start the race. But if I could start the race, then I felt like there was something to be gained about going out there and having the experience. And I worked really hard to get to the mental space where I chose to be here. So put a smile on your face. Don't be upset that you probably can't get fifth. You know, it's just be happy that you get to be there. And then it kind of changed. It was actually really fun, right? The beginning was fun. I wasn't stressed. I didn't feel any pressure.
Jay-Z was there.
Oh, really?
He was he did it on the mic. I think it was after you guys
took
off.
Oh, man, I miss Jay-Z. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off.
I heard, I was just very in the moment. And I usually don't really hear people cheering for me because I'm so in the zone. And I was just very aware. It was kind of an out-of-body experience where you've can see yourself running. It was just very nice. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I had fun. You know, I was sad when I, like, after, because I knew that I needed to drop out because my legs were burning. But, like, I also wanted it to be, like, miraculously that somehow everything worked out and I was actually just really fresh, and then I made the 26 miles and I got fourth place. It was great. But that wasn't realistic. And so there was, like, happiness and then a little bit of, like, oh no, like, I really want to compete. And then again, like, okay, you find, like, the gratitude in the situation.
Mm-hmm. What are some other lessons that you could share with people, you know, starting out in running or wanting to make a jump in distance? What are some, like, tips that you could, some pro tips that we can give to listeners looking to do that?
I mean, I feel like just go have fun. If you want to run more miles, go get a friend, because it's way more fun with somebody, you know? It's funny because I've been running with a lot of different people in Austin, kind of like expanding my pack of runners I have out there. And I was running with a friend and she was only going like 5 or so miles the other day. And I felt great and I wanted to keep running. But like as soon as she stopped, I was like, oh man, I feel kind of bad. So like if you want to go further, just grab a friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always, we do that in Montreal where I'm from and run in groups and stuff. And it is nice to like socialize after a weekend and just have a chat and just not focus on speed or anything. Just like get out there and do it, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that sometimes we get into this grind of it all and then it's like, oh, I don't even want to go out. Mm-hmm. Then don't go out. Like you don't have to, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have to either. No one's like forcing me. If I really don't want to, don't do it. If you feel terrible, you don't have to go. Mm-hmm. But I think that we mostly got into this because we enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And so if you just like let yourself have some grace period too, of like you don't have to stick strictly to the schedule and you can listen to your body and, you know, take it easy with a friend maybe the day you're supposed to do a workout because you're just not feeling it. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You do this because it's enjoyable.
Right.
And I do too. And when I'm not feeling it, I'm like, hey coach, like I feel a little tired today. I just went for an easy run instead. I'll do the workout tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Find a way to get it done and
to have, I just think like have fun with it. Yeah. I feel like I run my best when I'm just having fun. Mm-hmm. If it's all about the destination and not about the journey, then I get tied to like my self-esteem is within those results too. And there's so much more pressure. And mm-hmm. when I put it back to the journey, it's just about enjoying the experiences.
Absolutely. Speaking of your journey, I just saw a post you did on Instagram that there's a documentary being made.
Yeah.
About your story.
Yeah.
Can you just touch on that a little bit and how that came about?
This guy, Hank Bedford, last year, right after New York City, he's a filmmaker, pretty like well known and good. I don't know anything about making movies, but he actually seems really famous. Mm-hmm. He called me up or wrote me an email, and then we talked on the phone, and then he came out to visit me. I was in Arizona last year after New York, and then I was training in Flagstaff, and he came out there to film a bit. He's just like a really nice guy who wants to like tell my story through the marathon. And we were actually going to film, like he was going to get on a motorcycle and he was going to film me running yesterday's race. But then we had the discussion that didn't really make sense since I probably wasn't going to be able to complete the whole distance. So we'll do it another year. But I was surprised by how amazing I feel like the teaser is. And I don't actually even know like what his vision completely was, but made me teary eyed for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah, he's just telling, I guess, a story of resilience about me.
Mm-hmm. Is that the one word that you would use to describe yourself?
Yeah.
And, like what makes you that way? What's the, is it like
that? 'Cause I don't give up.
You don't ever give up.
Yeah. I mean, unless like I don't I quit running once just because I lost like the love for it, but I won't give up just because things aren't going well. Mm. If I still want to do it, I'm still going to go out there and figure out a way to make it work again.
That's great. What does running mean to you?
It's running is life at this point. Running is just, if I'm stressed, I want to run. If I'm sad, I want to run. If I'm mad, I want to run. Like, it is my own like little therapy session, and when I'm happy, I want to run. Like, I feel like it's like my grounding place.
Amazing. Well, Ali, thank you so much for taking the time with me today. I know there's a lot going on, and like, well, with all the festivities and stuff of the marathon, but I'm happy I got to enjoy this race, and I'm happy I got to sit down with you today and talk running.
Congrats.
Thank you very much, and I'm sure we'll see you on the podium and at the marathon one
someday. Yes.
Yeah, and good luck in Atlanta.
Thank you.
Take care. This episode is brought to you by Movember, an organization leading the charge in improving men's health. It's a fact. Being more active makes us feel good. So this month, La Rundown is dedicating each kilometer we run to Movember. Join our crew at moteam.co/WRG and help us raise awareness for men's health. Whether it's for prostate cancer, testicular cancer, mental health, or suicide prevention, we all know someone or have been personally affected by at least one of these illnesses. Show your support by growing a mustache, raising funds, or simply by being more active with us. This Movember, let's get motivated and move together. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi. And hosted by Justin Pugliese.